Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Brett Draper.
Good morning, Deb. Lovely to be here and good morning to listeners.
Yes, lovely to have you in the chair for Sophie. She will be back next week after her European sojourn and we'll hear about some of the amazing gardens she saw, I'm sure, at that time. We've got some lines free, so please call in to speak to Brett now on 1300 222 891. Being the first Saturday of the month and the first Saturday of winter, our special guest is independent climatologist Darren Ray with his winter seasonal outlook for gardeners. Later in the program, I have a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away, one by phone and one by text. And we love your comments on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. Just reminding on the fact that it is a long weekend to just be mindful of any fruit fly because we've got beautiful riverland. And Bruce at McCoulter on the text line says, it's important to remind people not to take fruit into the riverland from anywhere else in South Australia. There is plenty of fruit available on the Murray for that camping trip, which is quite right, and you're adding to the local community.
You are. That is correct, Deb.
And economy.
Yeah, and economy, and that's what it's all about. And, you know, it also means that you are getting the freshest fruit as well, which is just amazing.
It is, and I can vouch for Riverland fruit. It is absolutely delicious fruit and veggies and nuts, frankly. Let's go to Barbara at Seaford. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you, and good morning to you both.
Good morning. Now, you've got a couple of little gem magnolia trees.
So they're my friend. She had them in pots. They weren't doing well. Mm-hmm. So then she put them in the ground. They're still not doing well. They're sickly looking. Leaves aren't healthy, if any leaves at all. And she wants to bin them. I said, no, don't bin them. So if we dig them up and I put them in nice, fresh soil, healthy soil, in big pots. Is it okay now to do that?
Yeah, it should be. It's probably not ideal because the soil's a little bit cooler, but you could do that now if you needed to. Can I ask, so how long have they been? So they were in pots and they were transplanted into the ground, is that correct?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
And how long ago did that happen?
Oh, I'll say about 6-7 months ago.
Okay, and there's been no growth on them at all? They really haven't moved at all? Or
tiny bit, but they're struggling big time. The leaves are, some are yellow and got spots. And I said to her, there's something wrong with them. And, yep. Yeah, they're just, nah. I did, my parents had two magnolias in the ground and I dug them up from their house, brought them to my house, yep. Put them in pots, pruned them.
Yep.
Oh, a flourishing.
And they flourished, yeah, everything. Yeah. Look, I think given what you've said that's going on, I don't think you've got much to lose. I would be carefully digging them back up and then, yes, putting them into a nice sized tub with a good quality premium potting mix. Yeah. I probably wouldn't be recommending you add any fertiliser at this stage, but give them a really, really good thorough soaking in with a seaweed-based plant tonic. And then after about sort of 6 weeks, then it would be an idea to apply an organic-based liquid fertiliser to them. So let their roots just settle in a little bit and then give them a little bit of food and just see whether you can get a bit of a response from there. They do generally respond quite well to that. They can be slow to start with, however, so be a little bit patient. The other thing is if there's just a tiny bit of growth that's in there in the ground at the moment, they might improve in the ground if you leave them there too. So because they do have that slow response. So, you know, 6 or 7 months is a little while for them, you know, to be in the ground. So their roots might have started to move out from there. But, you know, if they haven't moved very much, dig them up, pot them, and you can then give them a little bit more attention and then you can maybe replant them down the track.
Yeah, that's my plan, is to get them healthy in my big pots. And then
perfect.
Because the one I got from my parents, I completely chopped it in half because it was very big.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, no, I've killed it. And probably
and then it responded.
Like, oh, my goodness.
Well, it sounds like you've got the touch. I think if anyone can do it, you can do it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara at Seaford. Might resurrect those plants. Goodbye to you. Thanks for calling in. The phone line to have a chat to Brett is 1300 222 891. Anne is in Melrose Park. You like your rhubarb, Anne. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, Yes, we love rhubarb. But we've downsized to a smaller house, and we've got a very small, slim garden border, and we've tried to grow some rhubarb in that. But although there's lots and lots of very skinny stems, when we have actually use some of them, they taste really earthy and not very pleasant.
Oh, okay. And so is it a plant that you've had growing previously and it's tasted?
It's a new plant.
It's a new variety. Okay. How old is the plant?
Oh, it's probably less than 12 months.
Okay, yeah. I think that might be a little bit to do with it. Generally with rhubarb, even though it might be growing very vigorously in that first 12 months, they normally recommend that you don't harvest the rhubarb and allow the crown to actually develop further. Right. And by doing that, that then means that because they're putting a lot of energy into growth, and that growth can be at the expense of the actual thickness of the stems and the flavour that's actually in the plant itself. So, especially this time of the year, apple and rhubarb is really, really, really nice to have. I get that, and people are really keen to get stuck into it, but it is better to let the crown actually establish first, and then from that second year onwards, then you start to harvest it.
And should we remove those skinny, droopy stems?
If they're still green and looking okay, I would say don't remove them, leave them on there, because they're putting energy back into the plant. But if they've sort of collapsed and the foliage is looking brown and sort of, you know, sometimes they can go a bit mushy, I would definitely remove those ones. Okay. Keep it as clean as possible if you can. Mm-hmm. And they really do like organic matter. A good, well-rotted animal manure is good to apply to the area, and a pelletized chicken-based fertilizer is also really good.
Okay.
Yeah, good. They do thrive very well from there. And you will find then when it warms up again in spring, it will probably power away quite vigorously. But you probably, if you can, avoid picking it for, you know, say 6 months, that would be ideal. You may not be able to, but if you can avoid picking it for 6 months, you'll probably find that you will have a better long-term plant.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Anne. We'd love your calls. Lots of lines free on 1300 222 891. If you call, you'll get straight through to Brett Draper and get the advice that you need for your gardening this long weekend. Alex in Broadview has got a bouquet for you, Brett. Says, spoke with Brett last week about my raised garden bed using, I don't even know, the Hügel culture method. Got started with the logs during the week. Now for sticks, straws, and leaves. So it's looking good there, Alex.
It does. I'm just looking at the photo. That looks spectacular. And it's a very long bed too.
It sure is. That is a big bed. So yeah. Alex, let us know how it goes. Please keep us updated. And Ian says, I rang a few months ago about half wine barrels. Sophie set me right. Very happy with the results. And we've got some beautiful bright flowers there in those half wine barrels. So thanks, Ian, for sending through those photos as well. We always love your comments on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. We are Talkback Gardening with Brett Draper. Love your calls. 1300 222 891. Brett, can we talk about the first weekend of winter and what that means for bare root fruit and ornamental trees?
Yes, Deb. Look, traditionally, it obviously heralds, the long weekend heralds the beginning of winter, but your deciduous fruit trees and ornamental trees for that matter have arrived right across South Australia through the garden centres and nurseries. And there's a local grower that actually grows tens of thousands of these trees and works very, very hard right throughout the year. Now they've got them ready to go. They're out there, and a lot of people that want to grow their own fruit, if there's a particular variety that you're looking for, now's the time to get in early and actually get the tree, because some of these popular varieties do sell out very, very quickly.
What are the advantages of a bare-rooted tree?
Well, Deb, probably one of the biggest advantages is a cost advantage. You get a considerable cost saving, and particularly if you want to establish multiple trees, say you've got a little mini orchard that you want to establish, you can save quite a bit of money by purchasing as a bare root tree. But it also then allows you, if there's something that you would like to do with the tree, like if you'd like to train the tree in a particular way, maybe a spalier, a stone free fruit or an apple or a pear or something like that, it also allows you to select a tree that might be suitable for what you're wanting to do in your garden as well. Whereas if it's a more established tree, it might be a bit harder to actually do that because the framework is already set.
Right. And how do you select a variety?
Well, it generally comes down to taste. I mean, but it could be, you know, the thing will be is you've got to really decide what you really would like to grow. And selecting, and you can select multiple varieties, for instance, to extend a fruiting period, because certain fruit trees will ripen at certain times of the year. So some will ripen earlier in the season, some will ripen in the middle of the season, and some will ripen in the late season, for instance. So if you wanted to get peach trees, for instance, you can actually then get ones that extend your fruiting right through the actual season. And of course, you know, the other thing you can look at doing as well is if you've got limited space, you might be even able to multi-plant a tree where you can put two trees into the same hole.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And when to plant?
Well, any time really from now on. But if you get your trees now, they're dormant. They're completely dormant. So as long as you've really completed it by the end of July, so you've probably got a 6-week window, but the variety that you want might not be available if you leave it too long.
It's all about preparation. I know that. So what type of soil preparation should you be engaging in now with your 6-week window before you plant your tree?
Yeah. Plenty of organic matter. I can't stress enough that you get plenty of organic matter into the soil. Heavier type soils, it's really important if you can. If you can add some gypsum and plenty of gypsum to that to the soil and to work that in. And to dig wide. So dig twice as wide if as you require. Not necessarily twice as deep. You still need to dig deep. So sort of, you know, 25, 30 centimetres would be ideal. But sort of dig 60 to 70 centimetres wide and loosen the soil in that area, because the more you can do that and prepare the area, the better and the healthier the tree will be.
Because, you know, they're going to grow out, the roots.
Correct.
Well. Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you plant it? You've bought them, you've done the soil prep. How do you plant them?
Yeah. If you've purchased a tree which is in a bag, so a bagged bare root tree, you'll find that there'll be damp sawdust around the roots. It's really important if you've got a tree like that that you don't put that sawdust into the hole. That sawdust is just to keep the damp, the roots damp while it's in the bag. Ideally, if you can, wash that off before you plant the actual tree. And I find a good idea is to have a bucket of water where you're working, and you can plunge the tree into there, into the bucket, which will wash off all of the sawdust that's on there. And then you can examine the roots. If there's any damaged roots, for instance, during the digging process, you can give them a nice cut, nice clean cut, and you'll find that the roots are quite short. If you imagine your hand with your finger sticking out like a claw, you'll probably find the roots are really, really short. There's not much on there at all. And that also means that when you plant it, it's really, really important that you reduce the canopy as well of the tree. A lot of people buy a tree because it's got a really nice big canopy on it, but the reality is you have to cut it back, and you've got to cut it back hard.
Do you need to sort of match it? Like,
you do.
Yeah.
So at least 2/3. And a lot of people go, oh my God, what am I doing to my tree? But it means that you've got the best success of establishing a nice, healthy tree, because all of that energy will then go into root development, and that's what you need. And then from there, you'll get a nice framework, and that framework is what will fruit. But it probably won't fruit in the first year. If it does, I would say remove the fruit in the first year and allow the tree to establish. I know a lot of people are really keen to have fruit as soon as possible, but if you can be patient and get a nice established tree with a healthy root system and a nice healthy framework, you will find that then the tree will be much better into the future.
And to feed or not to feed, Brett?
Well, if you've got plenty of organic matter, and that's ideal, a good a seaweed-based plant tonic when you're watering in is ideal. And if you want to, use an organic-based fertiliser as well, because you'll find they will take about 4 to 6 weeks to become available in a form that the plant can use as the microbes break them down into the soil. And that will be perfect timing as the weather starts to warm, and your tree should power away and be very, very happy.
Right. And so you need to prune back, and you're saying, first year, if there is fruit, take it off, put it in the green bin, forget about it. And so within a year, you'd expect
Yes, that second fruiting, you'd have a good framework, and hopefully you should have good fruiting on the tree.
Excellent advice, Brett Draper. Thank you very much. Love your calls. The number to call is 1300 222 891 to get straight through to Brett Draper. We are Talk Back Gardening on the King's Birthday Long Weekend.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Now, we only spoke about Alex from Broadview's amazing raised garden bed with, I'm calling it Hugel culture. I don't know if I've got that right, Alex, and you're back on the line. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, that's a very good pronunciation. I've been only Googling it, so hearing it out loud is good to hear.
Well, definitely don't trust me. But where are you up to? It looks like you've got a very impressive garden bed going.
Yeah, I bought far too much pine wood at auction, and I thought a raised garden bed would be a great option. So I've filled it up with logs at the bottom. My question is, talking to my neighbours about this, they've been like, oh, I've got this, if you'd like to put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the stage is I've got the logs in there, and a neighbour, I've got a few different options. A neighbour's got a bunch of clean fill dirt, and I'm wondering if that will slowly turn to soil if I fill it with organic material as well.
Yes, it should, Alex. Yep.
Okay, so that's a sorry, go on.
No, so that's what you're thinking of putting down next? Is that what you...
I think slowly, yeah, I can sort of fill pockets with dirt, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that would be ideal, yep.
Okay, wonderful. I'll do that slowly because it's about 7 metres long and about a metre tall, so I've got a lot to go.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a big effort.
Another neighbour has got chickens, and he's like, well, I've got a bunch of chicken poop that I can give you as well. Does that need to compost over time rather than putting it straight in?
Yeah, look, ideally, if it's composted, it is much better because it can be quite rich. So is it fresh or has it composted already? Do you know?
No, completely fresh. He's looking just to tidy out the chicken coop.
Okay. Well, look, if you wanted to put it down lower down into the actual bed with the soil that's there, because that your bed's quite deep, you'll find that will break down, you know, naturally further down in the bed and won't affect the plants that you might be planting, which will have much shallower roots. So you could put that into that soil lower down, all right, and because you're probably going to have, I don't know, what is it, 75 centimetres deep? Was it deeper than that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
because no,
right. You're going to have probably about, you know, sort of 30 to 40 centimetres of soil on top of that, which the roots will grow into, and then that chicken manure will be lower down. The alternative is you could actually then compost it yourself if you have got a composting area and let it break down, and then you can use it later onto your bed.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, awesome. That's another way to do it.
Awesome. And then the other option is, I've got people coming out of the woodwork to give me stuff.
That's great, though.
is that, like, my kids' school and our other kids' daycare, they have heaps of leftover vegetable and fruit material from, like, from out-of-school care and stuff like that. And I've been taking that from them to put in our worm farm, but now the worm farm's full. Is, like, whereabouts in the layer could I put all of that organic material? Is that sort of closer to the top or just fill her up?
Well, again, that would be better if it's broken down a little bit as well, but you want it to be a little bit further down. You really want it to be about sort of that midpoint.
Okay. All right, perfect. Well, I'm a big fan of recycling and lowering waste, so I think this project's coming up good.
And upcycling as well, because you've reused some of that timber, which is fantastic. Yeah, so spectacular. We'd love to see the results.
I'll keep taking photos and I'll keep you updated.
Fantastic.
Lovely. Thanks, Alex. We'll follow your journey. Appreciate the call. 1300 222 891 is the number. David from Crafers has called it. David, you got a thick skin, but not where you want it.
That's correct, yes. My lemon and my grapefruit tree is providing some lovely fruit, but the skins are extremely thick, and I'm wondering how I can overcome this.
Yeah, David, it's generally a nutrition based issue, and so it means that at some stage that the tree's probably used the available nutrient that it's there, or you may not have fed it the right sort of fertiliser. You do need a broad sort of fruit or citrus fertiliser that's got all the trace elements that are in there. Is the flesh that's inside the fruit okay, or is that not either.
It's excellent flavour.
Okay, it's excellent flavour. It's just got the thick fruit that's on, the thick skin that's on the fruit there. Yeah.
Really thick, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, look, do you fertilise the tree regularly?
Yes, regularly.
Okay, and what do you normally use?
I just say pelletised, you know, general brew.
Okay, yeah. So if there's lots of nitrogen and things in there, that will encourage that. So if you can balance it out a little bit, so a good well balanced fertilizer with a NPK which is sort of low in phosphorus, but it's got extra potassium in there, I think that will help correct it for you.
Thank you very much, Brett. That's useful.
That's lovely. Thanks. Thank you, David, for calling in. Rachel has done so from Cherry Gardens. Rachel, you've got a couple of Moor Park apricot trees.
Well, I did have two, Deb, but now I have one, which is a little bit poorly, but it's okay. I lost one, the other one. It's in a small orchard, about a third of an acre of trees, about 5 metres apart. And the second one I lost about 5 years ago and took out the whole root ball. But I'm hoping to plant another apricot in our little orchard. And can I put it in the same location, adjacent to where the old one was that died?
Yeah. Do you know what happened to the original one, Rachel?
It just died back with gammosis, Brett.
And, right. Okay. Yes.
Got very poorly and non-productive, so I removed it.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no reason why you can't replant into that same area. Have you done much soil preparation to the area since?
Not yet. No.
No, but you're planning to, by the sounds of it, which is good.
Yes. I have compost and I have, gypsum and I have organic pelletised fertiliser.
Yeah,
and all those
great. Yeah.
Things,
yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And so what sort of size is the tree in the pot now?
Oh, it's not in the pot. No, I haven't bought it.
Oh, you haven't bought it yet. Sorry, you're going to buy one. I thought you had a second one.
No, I'm going to buy a second one, probably a different variety. And but the original Moor Park, the one of the two, is still there. But I have cut back during summer the dead branches, and I don't think it's great. But I think it might go on for a little bit longer. I'm going to plant a bare rooted one this year.
Yep, perfect.
And perhaps a different variety, maybe one that's more cold tolerant because it's pretty cold and wet here in winter.
Yeah, is drainage an issue where you are?
Look, it has been, but I have made mounds where we had lost a couple of other stone fruit because of poor drainage.
Yes, yep. So that's what I was going to suggest. If the drainage was a little bit better, particularly if you said that your other tree, you've had some dead branches, it sounded like you might have had a little bit of dieback on there, and then I was suspecting that it might have been the soil being a bit too moist during the winter months of the year.
Yeah, the other one that's still hanging on was in a fairly high position on the sort of on the slope.
Right.
But the other one I think possibly could have been. So, yeah, it's not in the lowest part of the orchard. We lost some nectarines and peaches where it was very low in that really wet 2022 spring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this one, so you know, it's okay to put it as long as I've improve the soil and whatnot.
Correct.
Beforehand.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a pretty good grasp on what you need to do, which is good, and I reckon you'll have every bit of success this time around.
Lovely. Okay, so the next couple of months, I can get underway with that. Hopefully,
definitely. Yeah, and when you buy it, don't forget you need to prune it back hard. I know that sounds really, really harsh, but make sure you do prune it back hard.
Yeah, I know that. That's something I need to get better at. So I'll do my best.
Thank you, Rachel.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks. Rachel from Cherry Gardens. We'll continue Talk Back Gardening. The number to reach Brett on is 1300 222 891. On buying fruit trees, this texter says, our advice replanting fruit trees is just go for it. We brought 20 little plants down from Loxton when we moved down here, and now we have beautiful fruiting trees to pick from and to remind us of the beautiful Riverland.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it?
That's lovely. Yeah. So give it a go. Give it a go and just follow Brett's advice and you should be fine. Andrew from Blackwood says, I thought dirt was soil. What's the difference?
Well, there's... So I guess soil and there's probably not much difference, to be honest, other than they're actually two different words. But potting soils, for instance, you'll find are mainly pine bark or broken down material that's there, whereas actual soil itself will be fine particles. They'll have lots. They
dirt.
Can have lots. Yeah, they have dirt. They can have, clay particles in there. They can have sand particles in there. It's the soil or the natural soil that you find in the environment that's actually there. So, it's not processed. You're right, it is dirt, Deb, whereas soil...
It's been enriched, hasn't it?
It has. Organic materials. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I was just going to say it's been more processed is the word I was trying to look for. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that's answered your question. More questions, of course, are very welcome on 1300 222 891. We'll be hearing from Darren Ray with his seasonal outlook for gardeners. And that is for winter, of course. What lies ahead after a very wet May here in South Australia?
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Talkback Gardening on the June King's Birthday long weekend. It's the first weekend of June. It's wintertime. Good morning, Brett Draper.
Good morning, Deb. And what a gorgeous morning it is. It's cool and grey outside, but it is clear and it is winter after all.
Exactly. And it's going to be great gardening weather this weekend. So if you have got a question for Brett Draper, please call in now on 1300 222 891. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away, one by phone and one by text. If you'd like to prepare for that, don't send it now. The text line is 0467 922 891, and we need your full name and postal address. But being the first Saturday in June, it's the beginning of winter. It's time to speak to independent climatologist Darren Ray. And Darren will give us his seasonal outlook for gardeners for winter and joins us right now. Good morning, Darren Ray.
Yeah, g'day, Deb. And good morning to Brett as well.
Lovely to have you here. Well, I think last time we spoke, Darren, at the start of May, it was a pretty rainy day and you predicted some further rain later in May. But boy, we ended up having a lot of rain, didn't we, in the second half of May? I think we recorded some records, certainly for Renmark. It was their wettest May ever, I think, with 124.8 millimetres. So I think the question is, where are we going from here?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting one. I mean, there were some signs of it. It's just really tricky. There were some indications tropical activity was going to pick up quite a bit through May, and so we had that. So we had some, couple of pushes of moisture coming down from the tropics. The other interesting thing is the transition as we go through from summer into winter, the high pressure systems moving north, that sort of happened a bit more quickly than usual. And so we've been getting lots of weather systems along the southern parts of the state as well, linking up to the moisture. So that is something that you can see in the tail end of the La Nina events that we saw through last summer. I guess the indications I'm seeing at the moment, Deb, is we will get little bits of that on and off through June, just a little bit more, a bit more on and off. So, we've just had a burst come through now, but we've got some nice weather coming up over the next few days and then a bit more through mid next week, and so a bit more on and off rather than this persistent sort of cloudy stuff that people have been dealing with.
So patchy rain certainly for June. I heard this week, Brett, that the head of the United Nations is urging countries to end addiction to fossil fuels because of the predicted El Nino weather pattern, which is likely to form. So clearly that has firmed up even more than last time we spoke.
Yes, that's the other thing, since that's very much the case, Deb, is the predictions of El Nino have really, really strengthened since we spoke last time. And so they're now talking about over 90% likelihood of El Nino pattern developing as we go through the next few months. And that's, as they typically do, that'll stick around and influence things through till about sort of March next year, peaking in around December. But really the major impact is there's a connection between El Nino events and what happens in the Indian Ocean. So you typically get positive phases of the Indian Ocean Dipole, or IOD, that I've spoken about before, and that tends to support, very much shifts the odds towards hotter and drier conditions as we go through winter, but particularly in spring and early summer.
And is that firming up even more than last time?
It is. I mean, there's some interesting little wrinkles in there, in that sometimes in really strong events. So this, there's been a lot of discussion about this one being what some people are calling a super El Niño, which is when the ocean temperatures in the middle of the Pacific get like more than 2 degrees above the average, and some of the models are going like 3.5 degrees. So, but most of them are going for a moderate El Niño. But there are some models that are really going for very, very strong conditions for this event.
If it's a strong El Niño, what does that mean for us here in South Australia?
Well, it's a really interesting one because there's been the two really big strong events that are classics, 2015 and 1997, and this event is developing very much like both of those. Now, the trouble is 2015 was a really, really dry spring. 1997 was quite wet. So there were some really subtle changes in the Indian Ocean, which actually led to some moisture coming across Central Australia during spring in that event and early summer. So it was actually really quite a wet event. So it just doesn't make this one tricky that we could end up with a very strong event that might actually... there is still the possibility of having a wet spring out of it. So
wow.
it's a tricky one.
If all those things work together, it would be good to get some more rain.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really hate to be, dancing around this, but I do have to mention that. So it very much shifts the odds towards hotter and drier conditions, particularly through winter. So it was a very dry winter in 97 as well. But then it did wet up a bit in spring. So we just got to keep and consider that as a possibility. Even though it shifts the odds very strongly towards hot and dry for spring as well.
Okay, all right. So if we have a strong El Niño, it might mean rain for us, but a weaker one will lean towards hotter and drier.
Sort of, Deb. I mean, 2015 was a very strong one and that was very hot and dry. So we keep that as a possibility in there as well, to watch out as we go through the next few months.
And you mentioned last time we spoke that the Southern Oscillation Index has gone negative.
Yeah, so the farmers out there are very familiar with that. So negative SOI is a indicator that changes in the atmosphere are responding to, in an El Niño, they're turning towards El Niño. So negative SOI is the original indicator of El Niño conditions developing. So we're certainly seeing that. We're seeing this big, really, really big pulse of water emerging in the east, central, eastern Pacific. So the odds are very much there. It just gets a little bit tricky in the way the connection with the Indian Ocean can develop. For June, as I mentioned, very on and off. So there's a bit of rainfall coming through. So some nice, really nice conditions clearing up as big high pressure system comes across over the next few days. So this sort of patchy cloudy stuff clearing and sort of patchy rain and cloud clearing off. So tomorrow should be a really nice day to be out in the garden and through the next few days. And then another weather system coming through sort of Wednesday, Thursday. Then it clears off again for a few more days, so some nice weather over next weekend, and then it gets another sort of cold front showing up around about the 20th, 21st, something like that, and then maybe a little bit more right at the end of the month as well. So I think overall, we will pick up bits and pieces of rain, just a bit more patchy, probably touch under average, I think, by the time we get to the end of the month.
Okay, so touch under average for rain. What about temperature?
Temperatures, people would be surprised to know, we're actually running about 2 degrees warmer than average over the last sort of month or two. And, even though it feels a little bit cold when these weather systems come through, but, yeah, so variable, some frosty conditions at times, but generally staying a bit warmer than average. Similar story into June. The rainfall, a bit below average. And staying a little bit warmer than average. And what we're expecting as we go through winter, we increasingly see this El Niño positive IOD influence creeping in. And so that means sort of things tending to be sunnier than average, clearer conditions, and just warmer than average, and rainfall for winter between about 50 to 80% of average. So drier August as well. and warm than average August as well. So there's indications in there that August is going to warm up pretty, be quite a bit warmer than average.
Okay, so in terms of temperature, you're saying for July we're going to also be around 2% above average. And what about July rainfall? Where's that going to sit, above or below or average?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing at the moment is not very much in the way of tropical activity. So looks like quite a hot and dry August. Maybe 2 to 3 degrees above average. And really for people inland, that signal gets quite a bit stronger. So, you can, for people further inland, probably expect things to be quite a bit hotter. Than average in August.
Okay, so just in summary then, for June, we don't know because it's going to be off and on. It depends what sort of rain we get. Overall, possibly a touch under average, 2 degrees warmer. July, below average rainfall, temperatures 2 degrees Celsius above average. And for August, below average rainfall again and the temperature 2 to 3 degrees Celsius, possibly above average. What about looking beyond winter time?
Yeah, so into spring. So, like I've run the stats on Adelaide area rainfall, and on average in this combination of climate influences, the rainfall's typically half the average. Can be a little bit more, but is for most years on record. You see the rainfall around about 50 to maybe 70% of the average. So, given what we're seeing, I think that's what you'd want to plan on. But there is that one outlier there of, as I mentioned, 1997, where we had some unusual things going on in the Indian Ocean that shot some moisture across over us. So, yeah, very much shifting the odds towards that, below average rainfall. And in the modelling, very hot. There's every chance we could get a hottest on record spring, particularly in land areas. Temperatures in the modelling are 3 degrees or more above average. So it gets very hot as we go through September, October, November and into December. So yeah. So that sort of, increased heatwave risk, increased bushfire risk really comes on. For people looking to plant their tomatoes, it's very likely it'll get away quite a bit earlier than what we've seen over the last couple of years. So soil temperatures warming up very quickly as we go through September, August, September, and so people will be able to get away their tomatoes early. But for those up in bushfire-prone areas, just really, you really want to think about that likelihood of a extreme fire weather season.
Yeah. Darren, can I just quickly ask you, you were mentioning that through, this month in July, that it was going to be warmer and a little bit clearer. What's the likelihood of having frost during that period as well? Is that going to be a widespread thing or is that not likely?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brett. So as I mentioned, this sort of on-off thing. So what we're seeing is some really strong bursts of cold conditions coming through. And then when they get followed, you get a high pressure system come in strongly after that, so you still got some of that cold air lingering around. Then things clear up and the skies clear up and you get clear nights. There's every chance of some significant frost in that sort of pattern over the next couple of months.
So gardeners and producers, out there need to be aware that it's still likely that there could be some quite frosty nights during that period as well that could do a little bit of damage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's cold bursts and then high pressure systems. Yeah, it's pretty good for frost.
Forewarmed is forearmed.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Darren Ray, for looking at all this modelling and doing all this work for us. We really appreciate your winter seasonal outlook for gardeners and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, independent climatologist Darren Ray. Thank you for your texts in relation to this issue. Great to compare with other years, but remember, weather has no memory, says this texter. Long-range weather forecasting is the modern-day equivalent of fortune-telling and just as reliable, says this person. It is hard. These are only models,
yeah.
And we are living in a changing climate.
We are. And it must be, Darren's role would be extremely difficult. And the reality is when we talk about, 2 or 3 degrees above the average, but that's always going to be the case from now on. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So we just have to expect it and we have to be prepared. So Darren can only interpret, like all climatologists can, the information they've got in front of them. And the models do help. They do allow us to see a little bit into the future where we couldn't do before, but anything could still happen.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen right now. We're taking your calls. 1300 222 891 is the number to call. If you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you'd like to win yourself an ABC Gardening Australia magazine, call in now on 1300 222 891, and we'll take one by phone and one by text, 0467 922 891, but you need to put your full name and postal address.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Sonia is in Rosewater. Welcome, Sonia.
Hello, how are you?
Well, thanks.
That's good. Look, I'm calling just to get some advice. So I had planted a Anzac grevillea on a fence line probably about 6 years ago, and it just fell over in the wind. It blew right down, because the thing was, it was supposed to grow to about 2 metres, and I reckon it got to like 3, maybe 3.5. It was massive. And when we dug it up, the root ball was non-existent. I'm wanting to replace it with another native, because I like that it was good for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want it to get, it sort of needs to be a circumference that's probably about 2 metres, but also a height of about 2 metres.
Yeah, okay. So, Sonia, it can be, you'll find that those recommendations that you might find on a plant tag can, you know, the plant can sometimes grow a little bit bigger in certain environments that are there. But the important thing with things like grevilleas are they respond really, really well to pruning. and I would suggest giving, you know, if you want to look at using, you know, more grevilleas, certainly do that, because they are wonderful for attracting bird life and wildlife to the garden. But
yeah,
if you find that it starts to get a little bit bigger than what was recommended, I would be tip pruning it and keeping it under control to the size that you want.
That, like, yep. Yeah, it was good for the size, but it just got too big. I could not get to the top of it.
Oh, right.
And it was just ended up being top heavy, and I think that didn't help with the wind that we had last week.
Yes, because they've got a relatively shallow root system as well, and the wind was quite vigorous in some of those gusts that we had come through. I had a tree dahlia which was looking spectacular, and it just absolutely decimated it. And it didn't damage anything else in the garden either, which was really bizarre.
So it's just this tree.
Yeah, yeah. Correct. Yeah, and look, 6 years is a nice time to have a grevillea there, you know, a nice plant there. So it's probably time for a bit of a change anyway. But I would suggest going to a local native nursery if you can and having a look at the varieties that are there. And, you know, you might be able to get a couple of smaller, you know, two or three smaller varieties that you want to grow there. But there are so many varieties available. It's just, yeah, it's really hard to choose until you're in front of them.
So would I choose one that said that it was specifically a 1 metre, or?
Yeah, correct. If you really don't want it to grow any taller than that, because the reality is it could still grow 1.5 to 2, but that would be your maximum then.
Right, yeah, okay, cool.
All right. But it sounds like you've got some really good, you've got a really good environment there. The soil's obviously quite nice for the tree, and they're very happy. So, yeah. And and consider maybe underplanting it as well. There's a few things that you could look at. You know, there might be some ground covers or something that might be able to help to attract more beneficial insects and wildlife into the garden as well.
Well, there's a crepe myrtle next to it because I'm trying to, you know, keep things native sort of thing, and that's gone great. But, yeah, it was and I've got some, I don't know what ground cover I've got underneath it, but, yeah, okay. Beautiful.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sonia. Thanks.
No worries. Bye.
By 1300 222 891, although we don't have much time left. Congratulations to our magazine winner, Craig in Broken Hill on the phone line and Catherine in Coolunga on the text line. Pam is in Paradise. Don't we all wish we were there? Hi, Pam.
Morning, Deb. Yes, morning, Brett. I've just got a quick call about my roses.
Yes.
Just wanting some advice. They're looking terrible. Is it too early to prune?
Pam, have they lost their foliage yet or not?
About three of them have, yes.
Okay, yeah. Look, it's. I was going to mention this with Deb a little bit later on if we had time, but that's going to beat us. But I was going to suggest that wait for all of the leaves to drop and then prune, because you'll then know that the actual tree, the rose has gone into its complete dormancy. So I would wait a couple of weeks if you can. If you can't, you could get out and prune there tomorrow. Dara was suggesting it's going to be a fine day. Ideally, if you can prune on a fine day, that's the best thing to do. And just make sure you've got some nice sharp secateurs when you're cutting them so you have a nice clean cut.
And clean.
And clean, very much so. Hygiene's really important. So clean them before if you can.
Clean with...
Look, it depends. If you've got a build-up of material that's on there, you might need to use – I actually use a little scouring pad and some gumption, if you like, and then wash that off, dry that off, and then use something like some methylated spirits, and that will just sterilise them, and that would be ideal ready for pruning.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks for that very timely question, Pam. thank you. Sandra is in Glenside. What are the possums doing, Sandra?
Well, I've got a wonderful crop of grapefruit this year. They're absolutely wonderful, but they've never found the tree before, but they have this time. And the grapefruits are not completely all yellow. There's some green on the left, but the possums don't care. So I'm thinking, can I pick and I'm able to use them, or it's just going to be a race against me and the possums?
Yeah, I would, as soon as they are starting to yellow up, I would pick them, because I think the possums are out there and they're hungry, so they will, now that they've found them, they'll probably continue to consume them. And that way you'll still be able to share some fruit, and you're sharing some of the possums as well, but at least then you'll be able to get some of the benefit.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if some of the grapefruits have got a bit of green on them still, they're not completely yellow or anything like that.
No, I think it's probably a race against time. I think they'll still ripen. So you could pick them, bring them inside and let them ripen, and then you can enjoy them.
Oh, great. I shall do that.
Thanks. Easy solved. Thanks, Sandra. And I think our last caller this morning will be Debbie from Murray Bridge. Hi, Debbie.
Hello. Hi, I just want to ask you about my orange tree. It happens every year, unfortunately. It's out amongst all my plants. Anyway, about 200 little ones dropped off at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now they're splitting and dropping off.
Yeah. Is it a navel orange, do you know, Debbie?
No, I'm not sure what it is.
Sure. Okay.
On this house.
Yeah, look, you can sometimes find that they do actually split. And it can, you said you've got it in a bed with other plants. Is it possible that it might be getting too much water?
Yeah, I'm wondering is that what's causing it?
Yeah, generally, because what happens is the fruit develops faster than what the skin can, and as a result of that, the fruit actually, or the skin actually then splits.
Oh.
So, yeah, it can be, and that can happen, you know, sort of early in the process as well. You probably haven't had much rain down there just recently.
Unfortunately, we get lots of wind up here too.
Yeah, and the wind as well. Yeah, it's generally to do with watering, and it's a bit hard when you to control it when you've got it in a bed with other plants. So, yeah, try if you can to give it a deep water less often when it's required rather than lots of little waterings. But if you've got plants that have got shallower roots around, that can be quite difficult.
So right next door is a glass house with all the veggies in it, so I guess the roots underneath it go all under the ground everywhere.
Yeah, they could well be doing that as well. Just also to make sure that you keep the nutrition up to the tree as well.
Okay.
So well-balanced organic-based fruit and citrus tree fertiliser would be ideal, and do that on a regular, just a little and often on a regular basis.
Yeah, unfortunately, the crows like to come and eat them too.
Well, you're sharing it with nature, so as long as hopefully you get some as well, that would be the ideal situation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in, Debbie. Lovely to hear from you. Thank you to everyone that has called through or sent a text message through to us this morning. Lovely to hear from you. This texter says, my family were market gardeners and vignerons in the 1930s to 1960s. Indigo Jones and Lennox Walker were the forecasters in that time, incredibly accurate. And we had more stable times then. Obviously, we've got incredibly complex and very changeable climate conditions now. But, that would have been really a wonderful thing to rely on their predictions at that time.
Yes, it would have, wouldn't it? But, you know, things have changed dramatically. So, we just have to learn to adapt.
That's right. And that's what it's all about, trying to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And speaking on that, in just a moment we're going to talk about wise words to get you through difficult times. Winter for some people is a tough time. There is a thing called seasonal affective disorder. We're going to find out if that's a real thing, but I understand it is. And if you're having tough times, are there any wise words that you fall back on, Brett, to lift your own spirits and get you through?
Well, I do. And of course, a very dear friend of mine who we lost nearly a couple of years ago, Walter Duncan, always used to have a fantastic saying, and that was, if in doubt, do it. And I think about that often. And, you know, when you're feeling a little bit down and you're thinking, well, do I want to go out? Do I want to do that? Just go out and just do it. Get it done.
And it might be better for you in so many different ways.
Yeah, most definitely. And you just never know what might eventuate from that as well.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. They're great words of advice. Thanks for getting us started, Brett Draper. Thank you so much for your 3 weeks as our special guest, Talkback Gardener. It's been lovely to work with you again. And thank you so much.
It's been wonderful. And I look forward to hearing about Sophie's adventures next week.
Lovely. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.